From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Tiburon.
Sausalito.
Japantown, San Francisco.
Berkeley, California.
Coming up, we feature the work of our partners in radio storytelling. First, we'll hear from StoryCorps.
What I learned, 99% probability that my mother's gynecologist was my father.
Then Radio Ambulante tells us the story of a Latino who grew up as a Jehovah's Witness in San Francisco's Mission District.
I was born in 1975, a very convenient year, considering that's when the world was supposed to come to an end.
And we take a close look at cold, hard cash with 99% Invisible.
Its awkwardness from a design point of view has kind of been superseded by its symbolicness.
A full hour of community storytelling, plus StoryCorps founder Dave Isay today on Cross Currents. Welcome back to a special edition of Cross Currents from KALW News. Context, culture, and community from around the Bay Area. I'm Anna Baba. If you're a regular listener to our show, you probably know that we count on many community partners here at Cross Currents. One of those partners is the National Oral History Project StoryCorps, and I'm very happy to have StoryCorps founder Dave Isay join me from New York right now as co-host for today's show. Hi, Dave.
Hi, co-host. Wow.
You are the co-host today.
Happy to be, yes. Hi, Hannah.
Hi there. Well, Dave, KALW has been partners with StoryCorps in San Francisco from really the beginning of the booth here.
Yep.
I remember back in 2009 with StoryCorps Griot, you know, and since then. So why don't we start off, tell our audience how the San Francisco booth fits into the overall mission and the changes it's gone through over the years.
Sure. Well, you know, we're thrilled to be in San Francisco, and we're now at the San Francisco Public Library, and it's been a great privilege to partner with KALW throughout. I mean, we've talked about this before, but KALW is a really unique station in the country for its commitment to everyday people, to authentic, on-the-ground, grassroots voices, and it's just a fantastic partner for us. We've recorded, I think we're getting close to 8,000, 9,000 interviews with 15,000 people in the Bay Area. It's core to the mission of StoryCorps. StoryCorps, you know, and in many ways, KALW, if you're going to boil it down to one sentence, what StoryCorps is about is helping us all recognize that every life matters.
And we will start hearing those stories during this show. Dave, you with us?
Yes.
All right, let's hear the first one. Nowadays, there are many ways to make a family. One is sperm donor insemination. Here's a story from San Francisco StoryCorps about two people who went to great lengths to understand more about how they came to be.
I'm 68 now, and for 37 years, I didn't know I was donor conceived. I was pretty sure that my two younger brothers and I shared things in common with our mother, but we also each shared completely different traits from each other and from our mother and from the rest of our maternal family. I had never heard of donor insemination at that point. And so all that time, the thing that only made sense that my mother had an affair. And I wasn't able to trust her all those years. Well, I wasn't told till I was 37. For her, it was just a big relief to have that secret no longer burden her.
But once you found out, what feelings did you experience?
I felt utter isolation. I knew nobody else who was donor-conceived except my two younger brothers, and one had just died, and the other one was away in the Navy.
Well, my journey began when I was a very young girl. I approached my mother one day and told her that I felt like I was adopted, half in jest, half serious. And she said, "Oh no, I remember well the night I gave birth to you." So in my naive status, I continued playing and life went on until my parents divorced when I was in the seventh grade. And it was then that my mother told me that my father was not my biological father, that my father was maybe a doctor. And that was all the information I was ever given in my lifetime.
Your dad was not your father.
Mm-hmm. That was it. I was growing up feeling like half of my identity had been just ripped away from me. And so I built this wall of indifference around my feelings so that I could deal with it.
I understand. I mean, my mother said, well, you'll never be able to find out, and that's the way it's supposed to be, and he's supposed to be anonymous. There were no records, and I couldn't find anything. This was before the internet. I went 30 years struggling, and finally, a couple of years ago, I started thinking I better do family tree DNA testing. What I learned from the family tree DNA, 99% probability that my mother's gynecologist was my father. Gynecologists were using their own sperm at this time because before the era of sperm banks, they couldn't freeze it in those days.
When they offered me the DNA test, I thought long and hard about where the journey would take me, but I still proceeded with that testing.
So when she matched with me as a half-sibling, it's very clear that means that we would have the same father.
The DNA testing proved that we were indeed brother and sister, and what a joyous day that was. I always wondered and pretty much knew that I probably would have other brothers and sisters out there. I never expected to meet them. But I, too, felt like, well, what if he doesn't like me? What if we don't fit?
And we'd had talks on the telephone, and I thought, what? Great lady. And there was nothing holding back or anything. Totally open. And I felt nothing but compassion for her story.
I feel complete. I feel like I have found siblings that are more in tune with what I am.
Oh, I feel the same way. And it's just like it's a resonance almost, a genetic resonance that we have.
I feel like, in a way, I've come home.
Bill Cordray and his sister Lisa spoke in the San Francisco StoryCorps booth. That story was produced by Rachel Wong. You're listening to a special hour-long edition of Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. We're in our spring membership campaign here at KALW. We're calling it the Public Radio Party, so you can join the party. And today, helping us celebrate was one of our very valuable community partners, StoryCorps. And with us straight from New York joining the party is Dave Isay, the founder of StoryCorps. Hey, Dave.
Hi.
Well, it's our public radio party, like we said. Are you happy to join our party?
Oh, my God. Couldn't be happier.
Thank you for coming. Well, Dave, StoryCorps is one of our community partners, but StoryCorps itself partners with other organizations around the Bay Area. Why don't you tell us about those initiatives to gather stories from people who, you know, who really don't make it to the booth?
Well, we have half of our slots open for people who might have heard of us on KLW or through newspapers. Or otherwise. And then the other half of the slots in our StoryCorps booths all across the country and in San Francisco are held for community partners. And I don't know how many community partners we've had in San Francisco over the last 5 years, but it would be dozens and dozens and dozens, if not hundreds. We have about 60 different community partners a year, and that's to make sure that the widest possible range of voices and stories are honored and listened to through StoryCorps. So we might work with a criminal justice organization or an immigrants organization or a homeless organization to make sure that those folks' clients know about StoryCorps and come in and can come in and be honored by a loved one who will listen to their story. You know, a lot of that StoryCorps is really about giving people the opportunity to have this experience of being listened to. And, you know, we have come to believe that, you know, being listened to is
in the StoryCorps experience, and having these interviews go to the Library of Congress is a very important way for people to recognize how much their stories matter and that they won't be forgotten. And for people particularly who might feel like their voices aren't heard, that act of becoming part of American history through StoryCorps can be, you know, at times a transformative experience. So that's a big part of what StoryCorps is all about.
Right. And one of those initiatives here in the Bay Area is recording the stories at Zen Hospice in San Francisco.
Yeah, well, we have a number of big special initiatives also. So we have one called Legacy, which are people who are dealing with serious illness. And we have worked with hospices all over the country, including Zen Hospice. We have an initiative for post 9/11 vets and their families, and we're really excited to be launching a new initiative next month called Out Loud, which is something that's I've been working on for years to try to get off the ground, that's going to tell the stories of the LGBT community across the country, especially focusing on folks who are alive before Stonewall.
And those stories will be broadcast right here on Cross Currents at KALW 91.7. I'd like to take a moment to remind our listeners that we're in the middle of the public radio party. It is our spring membership campaign. Dave Isay is here with us on the phone to ask you to call now and become a member of KALW. And you can do that by giving us a call at 800-525-9917. Or you can go to KALW.org and make your donation there. And if you donate now, you'll get a special party favor, our community goodie bag that you can get for a contribution of $150. Let me tell you what's in the bag. Get this: a Radio Ambulante t-shirt, a StoryCorps tote bag, a 99% Invisible group of notebooks, and our own Cross Currents Bay Area Beat CD, a compilation of local music and local musicians telling their stories. All of these community partners said, you know, we want to be a part of this membership campaign at KALW. We're going to throw in all these goodies in one bag, and with a contribution of $150, you can get your hands on it only if you call 800-525-9917. Every contribution counts. Our basic membership rate is $50, but we've had people give $100, $500, $1,000. This is how we bring you these stories that you hear here on Cross Currents and through StoryCorps. Thanks to Dave Isay, who's joining me as co-host today on KALW. Again, that number, 800-525-9917. Radio Ambulante is a Spanish-language podcast that got its start right here at KALW. Their goal? To bring the narrative storytelling we know and love from shows like This American Life and Snap Judgment to the Spanish-speaking world. And they've succeeded. Now in its third season, Radio Ambulante has garnered tens of thousands of listeners and partners like BBC Mundo and PRI. They've also seen a need for this diverse and sound-rich storytelling about Latinos in English. So they've produced specials and English language stories for air on PRI's The World and stations around the country. What we'll hear next is an excerpt of one of those stories based right here in San Francisco's Mission District. It hasn't even been fully produced for Radio Ambulante yet, so you are the first to get to hear it. It's called The Witnesses, and it comes to us from Delphin Vigil. He was raised as one of the few Latino Jehovah's Witnesses back in the 70s. Here's Delphin.
I was born in 1975, a very convenient year, considering that's when the world was supposed to come to an end. Well, at least that's what many of my Jehovah's Witness religion believed at the time. To be fair, not every Jehovah's Witness believed Judgment Day and the beginning of a new system was due to arrive in 1975. It could be that not even the majority believed it to be true, but enough did. Some sold their homes and cashed in insurance policies. A few quit their jobs and became full-time preachers. Others stockpiled their oversized sedans and wood-paneled station wagons with emergency supplies like it was Noah's Ark, knowing for certain that they'd get the last laugh as the Almighty's Armageddon were sure to arrive any day now. Fortunately, my father was not one of them. He was, as members of the faith preferred to be called, one of Jehovah's Witnesses. And in 1975, he too believed we were living in the end of days. Pretty sure he still does. But my father always had this habit of sticking to the facts. "There is no mention of 1975 in the Bible," my father would say, before pulling out his tattered copy and reading aloud one of his favorite scriptures. Matthew 24:36. "Concerning that day and hour, nobody knows, neither the angels of the heavens nor the Son, but only the Father." My earliest memory of life is of standing with my father on the corner of 24th and Mission Streets in San Francisco on a Saturday morning sometime in 1978. I was three. The bright brick promenade above the subway station at 24th and Mission Streets was essentially the center of the city's Barrio Latino. Northern California's best Salvadoreño pupusas, Peruvian ceviche, and Mexican menudo were all within walking and smelling distance. It was also the most convenient corner for street preachers of all religions to have their say. We were doing what we always did on Saturday mornings, walking around the neighborhood, going door to door, distributing copies of the latest Spanish editions of La Atalaya y La Despertad. These were religious pamphlets that came from the Jehovah's Witness headquarters in New York. The corner of 24th and Mission Streets is where we typically began and ended our routes. On this particular Saturday, I remember standing on the corner after a full morning of preaching and then reaching to take off my incredibly uncomfortable clip-on tie when a man from another religion approached my father and I. He said something along the lines of, "You're going to burn in hell forever for your false prophecies." I'm paraphrasing, of course, based on my memory from being only 3 years old at the time. But what I vividly remember was how, despite shouting at us through a megaphone, I could still smell his rotten breath. And these words I remember verbatim. "That's right, little boy. I'm talking to you." I don't know what religion the man was representing. Knowing San Francisco could very well have been his own. But the man, whose face for some strange reason I now picture as being a long-haired Lee Marvin / Donald Sutherland, it naturally scared me. And I remember looking up to my father for the truth. "No te preocupes," my father would say to me, putting his hand on my shoulder and giving an intimidating stare that forced Lee Marvin to back away. "Este cojudo está loco." The fact that other religious people were crazy and fanatical was actually reassuring, since we Jehovah's Witnesses were often accused of the same thing. And in retrospect, I can see how waking up a half dozen day laborers who were sharing a one-bedroom flat in the Mission District to talk about how Jehovah's God is going to set up a kingdom that will soon crush and put an end to all human governments controlled by Satan might come across as a little screwy. With all this talk about Armageddon and the end of the world, it was easy to lose sight of what the Jehovah's Witness organization actually called preaching the good news. It takes practice to offer a message of possible eternal damnation with a glasses half full tone. My father, he had perfected the delivery. On just about every Saturday morning of my childhood, someone would slam a door in our faces or shout an obscenity at us or throw holy water at our feet to purify the part of the porch where we stepped on, of course, or simply point and laugh. But then again, just about every Saturday morning of my childhood, a stranger would actually invite us in. Inside hundreds of unknown living rooms and for countless hours, I watched my father mesmerize total strangers with an honest and earnest interpretation, not on the meaning of death, but rather the meaning of life. "You can live forever in a paradise on earth." That was the ultimate message of the Jehovah's Witness faith. And my father figured it made most sense to just get to the good parts fast. Often using our unknown host's own Catholic or Protestant Bibles to support his interpretation, my father talked about a world where the wolf would lay down with a lamb and the leopard will lay down with a kid, and how God will wipe every tear from our eyes and death will be no more. If he spotted an old photo on the mantle of a family member that may have died, he'd read the scripture describing how they could be resurrected back to earth. Like all religions, the idea is that if you're bad, you get punished, and if you're good, you get rewarded. When it comes down to it, possibly the biggest difference between the Jehovah's Witnesses and any other Bible-based faith is that our piece of the pie in the sky was not in heaven, but on actual planet Earth. Yes, even the corner of 24th and Mission, where hookers and drug addicts hung out at night, and where Lee Marvin and Donald Sutherland look-alike spewed hate in the morning, "This, too, would soon be a paradise," my father would tell them. And by Saturday afternoon, many of them believed.
That was an excerpt from The Witnesses, currently in production for Radio Ambulante. Stay tuned to radioambulante.org to hear the full story in the coming weeks. You're listening to a special hour-long edition of Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba, and I'm here with StoryCorps founder Dave Isay. We just heard a great story from Radio Ambulante, a show that's really pioneering a new kind of storytelling on Spanish language radio. They've also partnered with StoryCorps to bring Spanish language interviews to air through their episodes. Dave, launching these projects can sometimes feel like a big risk. What or who gave you the courage to start StoryCorps in the first place?
Yeah, it is a risk, but I mean, I think that everybody who's involved with public radio is in it because, you know, this is a public service and we believe deeply in the core values of public radio. You know, it's about treating people with dignity and listening and kind of a beacon of hope and humanity in a really bleak media landscape. And you know, I think for all of us, when you wake up in the morning and you know that the work you're doing is making people's lives a little better, it gives you courage and it gives you hope and it makes you just, you know, keep going and push these projects out. And, you know, I think it's all the projects that you're hearing, all of these partners, Radio Ambulante and StoryCorps, and, you know, the people work very, very hard and are incredibly dedicated, the people at KLW, and consider this a mission and a calling. And, you know, I am going to step up now as now that I know that I'm co-host, you know, I want to say also, mm-hmm. you know, if you care about public media, if what you hear on the radio gives you hope, if it gives you courage, if you've heard a StoryCorps story and it's ever made you cry or laugh or feel something, pick up the phone now and make a contribution to KLW, really one of the finest radio stations in the country. And I think I can say, without a doubt, of all the public radio stations that I know, the one that's most committed to grassroots voices. It's 1-800-525-9917 or the website klw.org. That party pack sounds fantastic.
The party pack. Get your hands on it. Yeah.
When I on a break or when I get off the phone, I'm going to go on klw.org and renew my membership. And I am calling from New York City to become a member of KLW. So please, if that makes you feel guilty in any way, then don't hesitate to pick up the phone or go online and join me to get that awesome party pack of all the goodies from various producers and partners who are putting this really critical and beautiful material on the air. You know, I travel a lot, and I was kind of looking at what was on, you know, CNN, and it's just, you know, endless. You know, last week, Monica Lewinsky, 24 hours a day, and it's enough already, you know, and that has, you know, KLW is just, it's just the mirror image of the nonsense that we're bombarded with all over the place. And, you know, if you want this service to exist, to survive, to thrive, you got to pick up the phone, you got to go on the web and become a member.
Excuse me.
I'm killing my co-host. And I'm sorry, whatever I've done. I'm upping my membership.
Sorry, I'm sorry. Let me just take a sip. 800-525-9917 is the number. You heard it from Dave Isay. He is a member all the way from New York City. Yes, you should join KALW right now. You know, if he's going to guilt you into it, that's, you know, that's motivation. 800-525-9917. Get your hands on the community goodie bag if you contribute at the $150 level. You get the Radio Ambulante t-shirt, the StoryCorps tote bag, the 99% invisible notebooks. Doesn't this sound exciting, Dave?
It does. And I know we only have a couple seconds left, so there's only one thing to say. 1-800-525-9917, klw.org.
From time time to time, the StoryCorps team goes mobile and collects interviews at different sites around the Bay Area. One of the places they visited was Highland Hospital in East Oakland. The public hospital has been around since 1927 and has since served thousands of patients from all walks of life. Janae Harper, who goes by the nickname Z, is a patient care navigator at Highland. She helps her patients navigate the ups and downs of the healthcare system and get the treatment they need. Harper met Benika Curry at the hospital earlier this year when Benika discovered she had stage 2 breast cancer. Here's their StoryCorps conversation from our archives.
I discovered my lump doing self-exam on myself July 15, 2012. That's my birthday. The urban community, you're so scared because you're not working. Your husband is the only one working, so you don't want to add to the bills. And I waited 7 months to even go to Highland Hospital, which to me, I think I would have been in stage 0 instead of stage 2. But it was so painful and I felt it growing. And so what Z did for me is to help me understand that it'll be okay and that whatever I need, she got me. And she helped me feel not to feel like I was a burden on my husband, because now that I was trying to find a job, I got breast cancer, I can't work. So Z, what made you want to be a patient care navigator?
I never chose to be a patient care navigator. Actually, I hated hospitals. But then the recession came. I got laid off of my job for 15 years. Prior to this, I worked for a nationally recognized nonprofit. And, you know, basically it was economics. There was a job opening I thought I was qualified for, and I applied for it. But little did I know the privilege it is to work for a hospital. I always thought about sickness in regards to a hospital. I never thought about healing. I never thought about wellness. I never thought about any of it. So I feel like I'm being enlightened and educated. And I have to say that I feel blessed, especially blessed to work for Highland, because I'm an Oakland native. I'm 50 years old and I'm born and raised here at Highland. So I really feel like I'm serving my community. So it's more than a job to me. You know, I personally believe there are professions and there are callings. And I believe that I have been called to serve. Highland used to have a reputation of just being a little raggedy ghetto hospital. And I'm not going to lie, initially, I kind of thought the same thing about Highland before I started working here and really getting to see the commitment that the employees have. I thought the same thing, honey. I thought I was cute. I was a Kaiser patient and, ooh, I'm not going to Highland. Are you kidding me? And now I feel so stupid and elitist because I was completely ignorant. But now I'm like, God is so good. God is so good. And he showed me the error of my ways. And I feel like because of that, ooh, I don't want to cry because I don't want to mess up my mascara. But now I feel like, man, how many people have I walked by on the street and judged them? You know, not knowing the backstory. Probably one of the greatest benefits of working here is it keeps me humble and it keeps me thankful, because I see every day how blessed I truly am. And it just makes me that much more determined to be a blessing to somebody else. Patients aren't going to come to chemotherapy and they're trying to keep a roof over their head, or they're trying to put food in their stomach, or they have daycare issues. It was just amazing how the order of what's important in the medical field didn't match the order of what's important in your personal life. So through our program, we've been really able to kind of like reprioritize what's really important for the patient in their personal life in order to deal with their health issues. And I'm telling you, Benika, you put a lot of us to shame that actually have this as a job. The way you researched everything, I mean, I could just sit up here and give a testimonial about you all day. I feel so small in your presence because I don't know how you do it.
Yeah, it was rough for me, like, I guess because the way my hair was falling out. But then I promised myself that every time I go to chemo, I'm going to be dressed for success. you know, because that's an accomplishment. Going to this chemo, just trying to still feel like you're human.
You know, some people are coming from, you know, being drug addicted or abusive relationships or just being poverty stricken. They don't really have a will to live. To them, it's like, this is just one more thing.
What I used to say, because that's how I felt, but what I realized is because you are damaged don't mean you cannot be loved.
That's right.
And you have to surround yourself at home, at your hospitals, as far as picking your doctors, mm-hmm. but especially at home, you have to surround yourself by positive people who are going to support you.
Mm-hmm.
And so my breast cancer journey has been awesome, especially having you in my corner. I'm the boxer and you my boxing coach.
Oh, well, go ahead.
And we fighting it.
I love you, Benikin, and you're such a blessing to me. Like I said, I'm better because of you.
That story was produced by Martina Castro and facilitated by Geraldine Asu. You're listening to a very special edition of Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba, and I'm here with Mr. StoryCorps himself, founder Dave Isay. Dave, a StoryCorps interview is a sacred experience. We just heard one. Loved ones go into a booth with a facilitator and have this intimate conversation about their most important memories and life lessons. What do you think participants get out of this act of being listened to?
Well, I think it goes back to what we talked about earlier. You know, we live in a culture where we're so distracted, you know, and there are so many distractions. And with StoryCorps, it's really an opportunity to turn everything off and sit across from someone you care about and show them how much you care about them and how much you love them by asking them questions. And as you said, you know, people use this opportunity as, you know, something you know is that the microphone gives you the license to have conversations and ask questions you don't normally get to ask. And, you know, people use this 40 minutes as an opportunity to say and ask those important questions of another one. And as I said earlier, I think that act of being listened to reminds people, you know, how much their lives matter. And the fact that each of these interviews, with participants' permission, and basically, you know, we've done 55,000 interviews, and almost every single one of them, we've gotten permission to put these into the Library of Congress. It tells people and reminds people that their story is indeed important and important enough to become part of American history at the Library of Congress.
What have you learned about people from these interviews?
Well, I think that if I was going to sum up what StoryCorps has taught me over the past, you know, we've been around for 10 and a half years, you know, it's made me a much more hopeful person, kind of going back to what we were talking about before. I think that, you know, if you ask the facilitators who are on the ground in these interviews, acting as, you know, they call it bearing witness to these interviews, collecting the wisdom of humanity, what they all come back and say after this experience of listening to human beings talk to each other is that, you know, for the most part, people are basically good. What we're trying to do with these broadcasts, I think, every week on KLW and on public radio is kind of shake people on the shoulder and remind them, you know, this is what's important. And it's kept me, helped to keep me focused on what's really important, to block out some of the white noise and remember what's important, which is, you know, our families and the fact that, you know, what's important in life is being the best human being you possibly can be, and kind of keeping track of you know, what's really important, what marks a good human being and a life well lived.
And if you're hearing this right now, you're clearly a fan of listening. So why don't you show your support for the stories we bring to you here on Cross Currents? Give us a call, 800-525-9917, and become a member of KALW or renew your membership. As Dave Isay said earlier in the show, he is a member. He is going to just renew his membership. He's all the way in New York. If you are here in the Bay Area, this is your home. You can, you know, relate to these stories. We tell you about stories down the block, in your neighborhood, you know, on streets that you drive by every day. We bring you closer to your community, and we want to bring you closer to us. Give us a call, 800-525-9917, and contribute at any level, the $50 level, the $500 level. But as we said earlier, for a $150 donation, you can get a StoryCorps tote bag filled with a bunch of public radio goodies, a shirt from Radio Ambulante, notebooks from 99% Invisible, and a CD of local music compiled by the Cross Currents team. You can only do that by calling 800-525-9917, or you can go online at kalw.org. And this time we're calling it a public radio party because, you know, it's all about bringing people together, kind of in this collective act of listening together to stories from your neighborhood, to listening to stories from your city, from our, you know, large area with all the diverse voices from Oakland to San Jose. And it's just, you know, you can only find it here. Whether we like it or not, money plays a big role in our lives. But in all the time we have to spend thinking about it, how much of that thought is put into how the money actually looks? Well, it's never too late. We're going to do that right now.
This is 99% Invisible. I'm Roman Mars. U.S. paper currency is so ubiquitous that to really look at its graphic design with fresh eyes requires deliberate and focused attention. So pull out a greenback from your wallet and just really take it in. All the fonts, the busy filigree, the micro patterns. It's just dreadful.
From a pure designer's point of view, that's tough because it is a little bit subjective, but...
It's horrible. There's like 8 fonts on this thing.
Typographically, graphically, symbolically, if it had never been designed before and someone was to submit that as a solution, I think they would just sort of throw it out.
That's Richard Smith. He runs a contest called the Dollar Redesign Project.
It's become a classic, like classics do, through time. Its awkwardness from a design point of view has kind of been superseded by its symbolicness.
U.S. currency has changed very little over time. In the 20th century, it barely changed at all. But this is not the case in other countries. And because their currencies have been updated, they include some striking design innovations. Case in point, Australia.
Let me introduce a masterpiece of Australian design and technology. Australia's new $5 plastic note.
I'm really proud of our money. I have absolutely no idea why I'm so proud of it, but I really am.
That's Tristan Cook, and you're about to hear why he's so proud. Tristan and Tom Nelson are user-centered designers, and they run a blog called Humans in Design. Tristan is Australian, Tom is American, but Tom went to school in Australia for a couple years, and the money there made a big impression on him.
The money is plastic, and they're all different sizes, and they're colorful.
At first, these changes were disconcerting.
It all just looked like toy money to me.
But after Tom's initial shock, he began to appreciate all the different design characteristics of Australian currency that make it, at least from his point of view, better than U.S. currency. The first is color.
$5 is sort of a lavender. $10 is blue with a little bit of a green stripe in it. $20 is...
When you look at the ways that you can tell the differences between things, it's called coding. That's the very simple human factors term for it. And you code through things like size, shape, feel, and color. So in Australian money, we have ours coded primarily by color.
Which, in some ways, is a better index because it doesn't require knowledge of who's on the bill. It only requires recognition of a color.
Color is so strongly coded that most Australians don't seem to know who is on each denomination. Number 2, size.
The bills are also different sizes as well, so they feel different in your hand.
Sometimes when I've got a bit of cash in my pocket, I can tell the difference between a $5 note and a $20 note because of the feel.
I would say that it's about a centimeter difference between each denomination.
And both these characteristics relate to the most egregious problem with American money. Uniform color and size make U.S. bills very hard on the visually impaired. And changing these is not just better for the blind, it's better for everyone.
You can see whether you've got a 5, a 10, a 20, or a 50 from the top of your wallet.
Another innovation, composition.
It's a thin sheet of plastic.
The polymer notes were developed primarily to combat counterfeiting.
You can actually put it through the washing machine and it'll be fine.
These plastic notes cost more, but they last longer.
They tend to last 4 times longer than fibrous paper notes.
So you get notes in Australia that are 20 years old and they pretty much just look the same.
When I first learned about these innovations, I think I zeroed in on the central problem of U.S. currency, and that is that our bills are treated like artifacts, not a piece of living technology. So when the greenback was forced to evolve, primarily to combat counterfeiting, they chose to cram all these modern fonts and generic American imagery shimmering in the background of the old design. And the result is an anachronistic jumble and not a beautiful designed object.
You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba, and I'm here with StoryCorps founder Dave Isay. We just heard a 99% invisible piece about the design of money. If you took some money out of your wallet to look at during that story, why don't you consider giving it as a gift to your local public radio station? 800-525-9917 is the number to call right now to join the public radio party. Join the KALW membership campaign. This time it's a party. And with us in the party, oh, there he is, Dave Isay. Hey, Dave.
Hello.
Welcome to the party.
Are
you enjoying
it? Especially in the middle of the day.
All right. Thank you for joining us. And
why don't you
give them the number to call if they want the goodies?
Yes. Well, this is a very important number today. And so write it down or just dial it, as I say it, 1-800-525-9917, or go to KALW.org and become a member like I am, from Brooklyn, a proud member, about to renew my membership, about to get the party bag. You know, I was thinking the other day, I heard this for the first time, that Mr. Rogers, the great public television children's guy, I used to carry a quote around him in his wallet, and the quote was something like, it's impossible not to love someone whose story you've heard. You know, and that's what KALW does. It helps us, you know, recognize that maybe we're not all that different from one another, and maybe we should be less afraid of one another, and maybe we can treat each other with a little bit more compassion. KALW brings people together. It's a place where voices can get on the air. It's a place where creative, brilliant shows can be born and propagate through the country. It's a place of thoughtful conversation, of treating people with dignity, treating people with respect. And if you want to be a part of this, you have to pick up the phone now and call, because without your support, there is no KALW, there is no StoryCorps, there's no 99% invisible. Radio Ambulante, it doesn't exist. So if this public radio station means something to you, if this kind of communication speaks to you, pick up the phone now. Call 1-800-525-9917 or go to KALW.org and join me as a proud member of KALW.
You heard it from Dave Isay, the founder of StoryCorps. We heard a StoryCorps today in this show. We heard from 99% Invisible, all community partners of KALW. We produce our own programming here at Cross Currents, of course, but we love to kind of reach out to these initiatives and tell these stories together, really. You can get a hold of this goodie bag, which basically has all the goodness of these shows together in one bag, a StoryCorps bag, at the $150 level if you contribute right now at 800-525-9917. Become a member of KALW. Be a part of this station that brings you these stories. And we cannot do it. It's just straightforward. We can't do it without you. We can't do it without your contributions. We're in this together. You are our partners. You, the listeners, are our community partners in bringing you this programming that you hear every day, day and night here on KALW. Why don't you give us a call? 800-525-9917 or go to kalw.org. I'd like to thank you, Dave, for being with us.
Well, thank you. Hannah, for everything that you do, for the hard work you do day in, day out, giving all these voices a home on the radio and broadcasting them out to the people of the Bay Area. You know, the StoryCorps stories you hear on this show are stories that that we don't cut, that you all cut on Cross Currents, and they're stories that get on the air because you found them, you've identified them, and you've brought these voices to the Bay Area. So
and
we thank you for that.
Thank you so much, Dave.
All right, I hope we do okay.
For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.